If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. If it affects your life in any way, we're talking about it. And today we're talking about how money affects your relationships. And you know what? Sometimes that relationship is with yourself. Joining me today is Jennifer Love. She is a philosopher and money therapist. So welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me come play with you today.
Now, I am curious about how in your books and in your talks, you've said that sabotage can play with our money relationship. But what type of sabotage are you talking about?
Well, sabotage shows up in many different ways, but let me start by actually describing what it feels like. So what that feels like in our body might feel like tightness in our shoulders or in our jaws, or maybe we feel a lot of contraction, almost like our chest is in a contraption device that's being pressured down, right? It might sound like everything will be messed up. Get this decision right. Control them. I'm not doing enough. I'm terrible at being consistent and following through. I don't know enough. I'm not good enough. Push through. It's not fair. I'm better than they are. I don't know how. I can't. Everything's going to fall apart and get it together. And this voice shows up in our emotions, right? In our emotions that of fear that then begin to stop us from moving forward, or boredom, which then sends us on maybe shopping sprees and spending money that we don't necessarily have budgeted for. Or anger that can lead to us sounding like, I deserve this. Or, you know, you hear that green with envy that keeps playing us in a small kind of a way.
Yeah, I've had that angry voice, especially with work matters in the past, where I didn't get the promotion and, you know, I've been here longer and how dare they, and those sort of things when I was younger. And so I understand that one. And I think I've seen some of those other behaviors in others as well.
You know, this often will show up in sales, like yo-yoing in our sales and our business, like getting us into debt, right? Where I have entrepreneurs or leaders that I've been working with that get themselves into debt cycles that they can't seem to get out of for multiple reasons. Or burnout. I have one client, she had taken over her family business that was about $10 million in revenue and got it to $573 million in 6 years, which is pretty unheard of. I mean, that's remarkable results. And yet, while she created the wealth for her family, at the end of that six-year period, she felt bankrupt inside of herself. And she ultimately felt like she didn't even deserve to have the wealth that she created. She felt this sense of indebtedness and totally burnt out in herself and having to go back and retrace and re-nourish, okay, what's actually true for me? What are my needs here? And how do I want to relate in all of this with money? So it's not about how much money we have in the bank. It's about how we're being with the money.
And how do these emotions, these feelings, for me thinking, how did that person get this promotion over me? How does that sabotage my goals?
Well, it keeps us in this place of tightness. It keeps us in a place of not understanding what our actual needs are, right? What I see so many professionals and leaders is that they're walking around having a lack of clarity about what's actually true, what they actually need. And so these emotional drivers become the force in which they operate and make decisions from. And so we're walking around, I believe, undernourished in kind of an emotional poverty of sorts, because we're not clear on what those needs are. But when we understand what our needs are, we can then open up. We step into more of a place of possibility, that there are more choices than what I could see available because the fear was blinding me. The fear and anger also over time that's unprocessed begins to develop what I call scar tissue in the different aspects of ourself, right? Again, creating those blocks and barriers and traumas and things that blind us to the possibilities that are outside that we can't see because we're living in this contracted place.
This is all basically talking about the money relationship within ourselves.
That's right.
This is how we need to think about how we treat ourselves. And if we treat ourselves better, we have a better chance of actually attracting what we want.
Well, it's about treating ourselves better, certainly, but it's about even understanding what we need in the first place. And so, you know, we're having this feeling of anger, but why are we having that feeling of anger? What's actually going on that we didn't get the promotion and we're feeling angry about that? We got skipped over or something happened, right? Well, what's underneath that? What is that anger actually trying to communicate to you? I believe that our emotions are our friends, and there's information and messages that they want to communicate to us. If we leave those unchecked, it doesn't get any prettier. It gets worse.
And people are great about thinking about, oh, I was so happy when this happened, and the reason it made me happy is because A, B, or C. But as soon as we have what is in society perceived as a negative emotion, the anger, the fear, people avoid that like the plague, and they don't they don't want to know, why am I afraid of that? Well, you know, what caused me to be afraid or what caused me to be angry? But we're more than happy to investigate what makes us joyous. So I find that odd.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Those intense emotions like anger or sadness or overwhelm, right? We want to avoid them because they feel like a tsunami is going to, you know, come over, and we don't often know what to do with it. We're not resourced. We're not often taught how to be with our emotional state of being. And so then we pack it away in the dark closet and stuff it, and, you know, then cobwebs are building up. But the truth is, what's actually going on with that anger, unprocessed, unchecked, is that it's building up scar tissue inside of us, and it's blinding us, and it's creating tightness and tension and stress. And we all know what happens in our physical body with stress, right? But that's also happening with all of our emotions that we're not processing, right? So shame, for example, shame is actually causing inflammation in our body. It's directly correlated, the research is showing us, to fibromyalgia and to arthritis. So our unprocessed emotionality is actually popping out in our physicality, as well as in the way we're thinking about things, what we believe to be true. And so it's wreaking havoc because it's literally blinding us and building up that scar tissue all over our life.
Not to make light of this, but does this mean I can go to my arthritic mother and go, what are you ashamed of?
Well, I don't recommend approaching it in that way, but but yeah, there is likely shame packed underneath there in some way. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a great place to take a break. When we come back, we're going to delve more into this, how money affects our relationships, not only with ourselves but with others, and ways we can do to start working around this self-sabotage we may have. So we'll be right back with Jennifer Love. She's a money therapist and philosopher.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way, we are talking about it. And today we are talking about how money affects our relationships. And guess what? First off, you got to check that relationship with yourself. Joining me today is Jennifer Love. She is a money therapist and a philosopher. And in that first segment, Jennifer, we talked about a lot about the negative emotions. And if we aren't getting the promotion we want, or we don't think we're rich enough, we need to kind of look within ourselves and go, well, what are you saying to yourself that could be making things worse?
Yeah. Yeah. What are you saying to yourself? That's actually a really great question. One of the things that I often have clients do is track their, I call them unwholesome judgments, thoughts, and beliefs for a week or two, and just notice what arises. And there's a whole process I walk people through to actually begin to rewire that and see what's true and what to do with the ones that are true or not true. But we are carrying around so many belief systems that tendencies like the worry gene. You know, you hear of some, you know, Uncle Sam has the worry gene, and, you know, we in the family, we tend to worry a lot. That's kind of a symptom of the epigenetics and the way that emotionality and belief systems can be carried through our DNA. But then we're also through, we kind of talked in the last segment about how scar tissue builds up in the different aspects of ourself when we're not processing those intense emotions. And yet there's a lot that we can do to support ourselves in noticing, becoming aware of those thoughts and judgments, and also tracking what our blessings are, right? Like keeping a gratitude journal.
Right.
There's a great journal called the 5-minute journal. And it's simple. It's, you know, like 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening. And there's this simple, like counting your blessings almost and setting yourself up for what are you grateful for? It's this harvesting. Like you're going harvesting for what the good is in your life, because sometimes when it gets intense, sometimes when we forget, and it's often easy to forget what's good because the intention, the intensity of emotions or that inner critic can be so loud and overbearing. But when we place intentionality on harvesting what's good, what we're grateful for, it begins to open us up to see more of what's good in our life, of harvesting the blessings in our life.
So this would be the opposite of taking things for granted. If I just expect that my significant other is always going to get me a glass of wine when I just look, just like they should know that I have this look and I need that glass of wine. If I don't even thank them for that, you're taking that person for granted.
You are. You're also kind of, in a sense, taking yourself for granted. The intentionality that we can ooze into our life, the consciousness, you probably have heard people talking more and more these days about being conscious and mindfulness. But there's something about not only the gratitude in that, but the intentionality that brings into ourself. Because when we're harvesting gratitude for other, it requires us to also harvest gratitude for ourselves. Same with trust. The way we get to trust of other is through trust of ourself. So we're building that internal system and skill in giving us access to do that with other.
Yeah, I started about 15 years ago or so intentionally thanking people for even the smallest thing. If they, like my coworkers, sometimes one of them would go to the break room and grab water and they would ask me, they'd say, oh, hey, do you want anything? And instead of just going, nah, or no, I don't want anything, I'd be like, oh, well, no, thank you so much for asking. Like just mm-hmm. the smallest thing. And I don't know, about 7 years ago or so, all of a sudden I realized my outlook or my appreciation for everything had greatly improved from the decade before. I don't know, I probably appreciated it before I recognized it. But when I intentionally started thanking people for even the smallest thing, even if it was something I didn't want or I didn't need, I'd be like, oh, that was so nice to ask, but thank you. I don't really need it, but you just thank them. You don't act like it's an imposition for something they're asking, or that you think, oh my gosh, they just want me to do stuff or whatever. You thank them for asking and then be grateful that they thought of you for asking whatever it is they wanted or needed or are trying to get for you, even if it's something you didn't need or want.
You know, even in listening to you describe that, I feel an openness in my body listening to you, almost like there was an openness that was happening in you that you were accessing even more for yourself and inviting in the kindness and the thoughtfulness and the compassion. And man, Heather, don't we live in a world where we just need more kindness and compassion and thoughtfulness? Oh, what would the world look like if we gave that to ourselves and to each other?
I know. And this year, 2020, has been one of those years we just hope to like press the delete button and it kind of goes away. But So a lot of us are getting together for the holidays in the coming month and a half or so, whether that's virtually or actually in person. I think now is the perfect time to be thankful for each other, even those people that you've been stuck in the house with for months on end. And if you aren't with the people that you want to be, I think being grateful for having the technology to have virtual communication with people. You can turn on Zoom. You can, if people have those Alexas or Google Homes and they have the visuals to them, plug those in, say hi to everybody. And I think now is the best time to do that.
And that's the opportunity again, I'd say, to look, begin to harvest what you are grateful for. It's really easy to see the stuff that triggers us or brings a charge or that frustrates us and agitates us, because those are the intense kind of emotions, right? That are often very connected and tied to other things, other wounds, other traumas, other pains in our life, in our past that it just kind of brings up. But if in that moment you can actually go, with a deep breath, and breath is always a really fantastic thing to return to. It's really our life force, the breath, and it creates a sense of calm. And if we actually put our hand on the back of our neck and begin to rub the back of our neck, it calms down the central nervous system, and it gives you a little space within yourself to be able to then go, okay, what else is true here? Maybe I'm feeling a little triggered, but what is good? And I can harvest what I'm grateful for in this moment. Let me just take a little space for that.
And I would say, since I've gone through some of this process, I know there's always room for improvement, but in the last 10 years, I have gotten the job that I really wanted. I'm making more money than I ever have. And that wasn't the point of the job. I just loved the job itself. But it brought me so much more money and raises, and that I am so grateful for and thankful for. But I really, truly don't think 15 years ago, I would ever have been in that position, because I wasn't as open and took everybody around me for granted.
Yeah. And what I'm curious, what did that create for you? What do you see like in that shift for yourself? What opened up, or what became possible then?
I realized I've always been pretty money centric my whole life, calculating my checkbook 10 times over in a 3-day period, or like, money, where am I going to get it? Money, money, money. And it wasn't even so much greed or like I was trying to get thousands of dollars. I was just so careful about every single penny that I had. Like, I didn't want to spend it. And it's mine, whatever I have, it's mine. And I wasn't willing to share. And that wasn't working for me. Mm-hmm. I was depressed. I was angry all the time. I had that, why did that person get promoted over me? I trained them. How did they get promoted before me? I can't even tell you that it was I just woke up one morning. There were just little tiny shifts that I realized I wasn't happy. And that light bulb went off, that saying that says, futility is doing the same thing the exact same way day after day and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
Like I was doing the same thing all the time and nothing was changing. So I finally started just changing a few little things. I read a couple of books, and one of them was, you give, then you're more likely to receive. And while that went against every grain in my body to give even 10 cents to somebody, I was like, I'll give up this dime,
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the book? Is that Adam Grant's Give and Take book?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice read for this conversation. What you were just describing in the way that you were relating with money is what I call the money cautioner, the personality type of the money cautioner. And it's the downside of the money cautioner, where there's this kind of constriction and this fear, and that can express itself in a variety of ways of like, oh, it's mine, or oh, I'm afraid, oh, maybe I'm afraid to lose it. And underneath that, there's really this sense of emotional safety. There's this fear of somehow I'm not safe with this. There's and that's what I'm pointing to kind of in the earlier segment here, when we can begin to identify what are our needs. Oh, I have a need for emotional safety. Why is it that I'm not feeling emotionally safe around this right now? Let me explore that and unpack that and see how can I actually get this need met? Now, it sounded like you began to take little steps. You begin to get more information. You begin to look at what are other ways that I could relate to this and be with this and feel about this. And that's it, right? That's what we need to do. We need to begin to say, this isn't really working for me. What are my needs? How do I want to be in the doing? How do I want to be in the relating with money? And sometimes we need a little support.
This journal that you talk about, the 5-minute journal, where just every day write down two or three things that you're grateful for. But one of them that you have in here, write down what would make today great. And I love that. You have to think about something that you could do or something that could happen that would make today great. But the first thing that came to my mind was, well, if I'm asking for world peace every single day and it doesn't happen every single day, then you're setting yourself up for failure, emotional failure.
Yeah, so that's a really great point. And you can ask for peace, but maybe starting with peace inside yourself, you know, is a great way, or harmony, right? Like, okay, how can I have peace and harmony today? What do I need to do in my life? Do I need some more simplicity? Do I need to have a conversation? You know, maybe clearing some with someone? Do I need to take a walk and be in nature? Right. So how can I create peace and harmony in my own life? And it's interesting when our internal state begins to shift, we attract similar state around us. And so over time, the environment around us begins to be affected. It's kind of like tuning forks. You know, when the tuning fork is vibrating and then you put another tuning fork close to it, that other tuning fork begins to vibrate in the same way. It's that kind of logic. It's that kind of vibration that we want to attune ourselves to. And then we can watch the environment around us begin to attune to that as well.
This is a perfect time to take a break. When we come back, I have one more subject I want to delve into. So we'll be right back with Jennifer Love, the money therapist. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. And today we're talking about your relationship to money. Joining me today is Jennifer Love. She is a philosopher and a money therapist. And Jennifer, in the last couple segments, we delved into your own personal thoughts in regards to money and how that can affect whether you just feel tight around money and upset about it and you constrict yourself. Because you are constricting, you're not drawing any extra money or maybe promotions or jobs that you like to you. But if you open up a little bit more and you start giving and you change that thought process that you have about yourself and about money, that can help you with wealth. And we don't mean necessarily wealth as far as hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Or maybe it is.
Okay. Or maybe it is. Yes. And while I am nowhere near making even $100,000, I feel wealthier because I feel like my relationship to money isn't so needy. I don't feel this overwhelming, just it was such a heavy burden to think about money all the time. And I don't have that. So now I feel wealthier just about money when I'm not trying to squeeze it so tight between my hands.
Yeah, what you're describing is more of a, what I call living wealthy, which is a state of feeling alive and free and satiated and satisfied, you know, in your life and in your relationship with money. Doesn't mean that you're not striving to achieve or to build or create or, you know, to invite in, welcome in more money. But it's about the state of being within yourself. And that's what I hear you describing.
In reading some of your materials, you talk about the Cinderella story, which, you know, in my head, I think Cinderella and I think, oh, well, the poor girl who was cleaning up ashes and then marries the prince, and now she's wearing these fancy dresses. So for you, what is rewriting that Cinderella story mean?
Yeah, well, this is a really fun topic for me. And in my upcoming show that will be hosted on iTunes called The Nature of Money. But for me, I see the Cinderella story, which, by the way, dates back. It has been around. So it's been around for like 2000 plus years. There's so many different variations, like as many variations as there are colors on the rainbow. And it crosses every culture in our world. And this has been a story that's been passed on for generations and generations and generations. And what is it really? I see the Cinderella story as a rather suppressive story. It's a narrative that's suppressive of women's natural state of being. And it isn't just a fairy tale. To me, it's like a personal financial nightmare. And unpacking the Cinderella narrative, you can see how not only did her parents not properly plan for kind of like a living will, or, you know, what was going to happen if there was a passing, and her parents ultimately did pass. But then there's this watching the women kind of keeping each other down, right? So the stepmothers, the stepsisters are keeping Cinderella in this kind of suppressive environment where they're tearing her down, literally keeping her playing small. And she's choosing to stay there. She's choosing to play in this role. I call this, this is called the crap in the bucket mentality, where there's this fear from the stepmother and stepsisters of maybe jealousy of Cinderella's natural beauty and talents. And the crab in the bucket mentality says, well, if you put a bunch of crabs into a boiling pot of hot water, they could all get out. They could even help each other get out. But as one tries to get out, the others pull it back down. And therefore, it becomes the demise of all the crabs in that bucket, right? And I see that we have perpetuated this keeping women down across generations and tearing each other down and fighting for the prince to come save us in our life, or something to save us in our life, right? This isn't just for the women. This is also for the guys. Like, we're constantly looking for something to save us, to rescue us, right? If we continue on through how Cinderella thinks she's going to be able to go to the ball, but then, you know, the clothes are stripped from her as she's going down the stairs to meet her stepmother and stepsisters. And she then goes out into the dark garden and she's crying, you know, she's crying on the bench. And it's really the first time she begins to really allow herself to access those deep, intense, dark emotions. And she's letting herself feel her feelings and have it. And that's one of the magic moments. It's when the fairy godmother appears. I call it the bibbidi bobbidi boo moment. And so she rises to her feet, and Cinderella, seeing the magic begin in front of her, it's, you know, all this magic of possibility of what can be transformed in her life. But it's the moment where Cinderella says, hey, but what about me? And she's then beginning to stand in her own worthiness. Oh, what about me, my dress? So then her dress is changed, and she's like about to go off to the ball. But it's not without creating parameters on our success. At the stroke of midnight, it will all end, right? And the only way we're actually going to reach happiness is if we're actually saved, you know, whether that's by a prince or a princess or something else in our life. And so this story has perpetuated, I think, a financial nightmare in how we are passing this story along to our children and to women and men, and how to relate with ourselves and how to relate with each other and how to relate with our value and therefore even money. And to be responsible humans, we must examine our life, examine our beliefs, examine our choices, and what has made us who we are. And that gives us access to more freedom and to more choice in our lives and within ourselves. Because what's the alternative? I mean, people who are not empowered tend to allow others to make decisions for them. But yeah, we're interdependent beings affecting one another, sure. And that synergy works when each of us really shows up fully as who we are, being willing to be authentic, being willing to be interdependent, even messy, and trust. Because when we do, then we empower ourselves and we empower others.
Any last words? What are your top two or three tips you have for people who are trying to correlate their emotional well-being with their money well-being?
Well, I would say begin by self-examination. And so I love to do that through kind of a Socratic style self-inquiry. in contemplation. And so a couple of questions you might begin to ask yourself, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily fun. It's things that you're avoiding and want to run away from. But if you have the courage and bravery to go and look, because who was it that said an unexamined life is not worth living, right? If you have the bravery to go look, you might just be fascinated by the pot of gold that you find within yourself. And so the question that I would start with is, what is it that I'm afraid to look at, that I'm avoiding, and why? And what is it that I then am hiding from other people and don't want them to know about me, and why? Simple questions, not necessarily easy, but simple.
All right. Well, Jennifer Love, again, you are a money therapist and a philosopher. Thank you so much for being on the show and helping us maybe make a start this Thanksgiving for being thankful for what we do have and moving forward to what we want in the future.
Wish you all a blessed Thanksgiving.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.